This is Dee Feichert, returning with the Decatur Herald and Review for October 7th, 2015. We'll begin this portion of the reading with obituaries. The first one is for Shirley May Beaver, B-E-V-E-R, of Newton. Shirley May Beaver, 101, of Newton, passed away Friday, October 2nd, 2015, at St. John's Hospital in Springfield, Illinois. Funeral services will be at 1 p.m. Saturday, October 10th, 2015, at the Crane Funeral Home in Newton. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. until time of service at the funeral home. Burial will be in the West Lawn Cemetery, Newton. Memorial gifts in memory of Shirley may be given to the Southeastern Hospice, Hope Food Pantry, or the Donor's Choice. Next, Mary Alice Brenner of Decatur. Mary Alice Brenner, 87, passed away on Sunday, October 4, 2015, in her home with her family at her side. Visitation will be Thursday, October 8, 2015, from 5 to 8 p.m. in the Morin and Goebel Funeral Home. Services to celebrate her life will be 10 a.m. Friday, October 9th, 2015, at Mound Chapel Church of God. Visitation 1 hour prior to the service in the church. Burial will be flight home. Ceremony will follow in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials may be made to Mound Chapel Church of God. Next, Jackie E. Brown. From Boody, B-O-O-D-Y, Jackie E. Brown, 72, passed away at 11:03 p.m. Sunday, October 4, 2015, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Memorial services will be 11 a.m. Saturday, October 10th, at Zion Chapel United Methodist Church, Boody, Illinois. Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, is handling the arrangements. Next, Ronald D. Campbell from Stonington. Ronald D. Campbell, 76, of Stonington, passed away on Monday, October 5, 2015, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Honoring Ronald's wishes, there will be no public services, and cremation services will be provided by the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Oakland, in Decatur, Illinois. Next, Charles Floyd Hardy, 68, of Scuba, Missouri, formerly of Decatur, Illinois, went to be with our Heavenly Father at 2 p.m. on Thursday, October 1st, at Anderson Regional Medical Center in Meridian, Mississippi. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. on Friday, October 9th, at Brinklinger and Earl Funeral Home on Oakland Avenue, in Decatur, with visitation from 5 to 7 Thursday at the funeral home. Burial will be at Macon County Memorial Park, Harristown, Illinois. Memorials may be made to the family. A memorial service for Charles' friends in Mississippi will be held at a later date. Next, Shirley M. Milestone. Shirley M. Martin Milestone, 83, of Shelbyville, passed away at 11:45 a.m. Saturday, October 3, 2015, at Shelbyville Manor. Funeral services will be Wednesday at 10 a.m. at Cornerstone Community Fellowship Church, with Pastor John Curtis officiating. Burial will be at Glenwood Cemetery, Shelbyville. Memorials may be made to Cornerstone Community Fellowship Church. Visitation will be Tuesday, October 6th, 2015, from 5 until 8 p.m. at Lockhart Green Funeral Home, Shelbyville, and Wednesday from 9 until 10 a.m. at Cornerstone Community Fellowship Church. Next, Charles A. Reed. Charles A. Reed, Sr., 57, of Decatur, passed away on Friday, October 2, 2015. Services celebrating his life will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, October 9, 2015, at the Church of the Living God, PGTCWFF, Temple number 46, with Overseer Elston Carter officiating. Visitation 1 hour before service. Burial, Greenwood Cemetery. Professional services, entrusted to Walker Funeral Service. Next is Constance M. Saxby. Constance M. Saxby, 93, from Decatur, passed away Monday, October 5th, 2015, at Symphony of Decatur, Decatur, Illinois. Mass of Christian burial will be at 10 a.m. Thursday, October 8th, at Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church, Decatur, Illinois. Burial will be in Macon Cemetery, Macon, Illinois. Next, Lana Marie Trusner, T-R-U-S-N-E-R, from Decatur. Lana Marie Trusner of Decatur, beloved mother, sister, grandmother, and friend, passed away Friday, September 25th, 2015. Friends and family are invited to celebrate her vibrant life at Life Changers Church, 1305 East Prairie Avenue, on October 10th, 2015, from 1 until 3 p.m. Walker Funeral Service is in charge of the arrangements. Next, Barbara Ann Woodard. Barbara Ann Woodard, 63, of Decatur, passed away on Friday, October 2nd, 2015, in her residence after a brief battle with cancer, surrounded by those who loved her most. A memorial visitation to celebrate and honor her life will be held from 1 to 2 p.m. on Saturday, October 10th, 2015, at Dawson and Wyckoff North Chapel. Promptly following visitation, Barbara's wishes were for her family and friends to share memories and stories. Food and celebration will follow at the Bourbon Barrel. And the final obituary today is for Carol Ann Zindel. Carol Ann Zindel, from Decatur, age 75, was surrounded by her family in prayer as she passed away on Sunday, October 4th, 2015, at Loyola Medical Center in Chicago. A memorial visitation will be held on Thursday, October 8th, 2015, from 3 p.m. until the time of the memorial service at 7 p.m. at Kisselberg Wakanda Funeral Home, 235 North Main Street, Wakanda, Illinois, 60084. Interment will be private. In lieu of flowers, memorials are appreciated to the American Cancer Research Institute. Okay, our first news article is entitled, Our Lady of Lourdes School Digs Its New Playground. This is written by Valerie Wells, H&R staff writer. Nobody had to ask the preschoolers what they thought of the new playground equipment at Our Lady of Lourdes School. No sooner did the dedication ceremony end than they swarmed it, lining up politely to try the new double slide and climbing all over the monkey bars. I like it a lot, Bryn Hennigan said. The monkey bars were the favorite feature of Darrow Akpoigi, 5, though he did plenty of sliding, too. He said the new equipment was a lot nicer than what they had before, which had seen better days. The school holds an annual fundraising dinner auction, and at the one in February, dubbed the Denim and Diamonds, when the announcement was made that the school's outdated playground equipment was in need of replacement, parents, alumni, and members of the parish dug deeply and donated $23,000 in 15 minutes, Principal Chris Upchmore said. Volunteers met at the school last week and assembled the equipment in 6 hours, and that included digging the holes, pouring concrete, leveling the area, spreading the mulch around the base, and all that was required to make Tuesday a special day. Prairie Materials brought machinery in to dig the 30 holes, and if not for that, the volunteers would have still been out there digging, Upchmore said with a laugh. Craig Sanders of St. Louis, whose company assisted with the construction, had predicted a 15-hour installation. We hope this will get the children moving and having fun, Upchmore said to the gathered children and parents Tuesday. Playing on the slides is good for your legs. Climbing the monkey bars will help your arms and shoulders. Running around is helping your heart. The appeal is you children will be around one another, learning to take turns, learning self-control, having conversations, and cementing friendships. The Reverend Rick Welton, pastor of Our Lady of Lourdes Church, brought a small container of holy water for the blessing. He asked the entire group to raise their hands, then prayed for God to bless the equipment and the children to enjoy it in safety. He sprinkled the holy water in the direction of the equipment, and some landed on children standing nearby. With a chuckle, Welton sprinkled holy water on other children, clamoring for him to do so, extending the blessing to all. After the playground ceremony, Upmore ascended to the roof of the school, where stayed Upmore, as it was dubbed, for more than 10 hours. Thanks to the school's community donations to the WSOY Community Food Drive. The food drive will take place Friday at the Airport Plaza Kroger. The next article is by Chris Lusvardi, H&R staff writer, entitled Rolling Comfort, RV Sales Gaining Speed. Increased interest in using recreational vehicles for more than weekend use has dealers in the Decatur area steadily expanding what they offer. Pete Koyak, Jr., Vice President and General Manager of Four Winds, located at 15277 North Wood Street, north of Maroa, off US 51, finds many customers enjoy having an RV so they can spend quality time with their families. It's one of the last things they can do that still has a simple time feel, Koyak said. It's almost like being back in the 50s. Four Winds offers customers choices no matter for what purpose they want to purchase an RV. Customers will visit Four Winds not just from Decatur, but also Bloomington Normal, Springfield, and Champaign-Urbana. And it's not unheard of for customers to come from all over the country in search of what they're looking for, Koyak said. They're searching everything to find it, he said. In most cases, they want the best deal. Four Winds has been in Maroa since 1971 and expanded to East Peoria in 2007 with the purchase of a dealership there, pushing its service territory farther to the northwest. It's the buyer's choice, Koyak said. Consulting rather than selling seems to work the best. We match our customers up with the right camper for them. With numerous choices, customers can feel like shopping for an RV is like searching for a home, said Sarah Pumphrey, finance director at Jerry Presley RV Center at 1565 North 22nd Street in Decatur. The amenities in many trailers provide the feel of a typical house, only with the ability to take it anywhere they want to go and perhaps find a permanent living spot, she said. A lot of people are living in them, Pumphrey said. Most aren't going to spend $50,000 to go camping 6 times a year. Some of them live in luxury. The trailers have different options for bedrooms, types of bathrooms, kitchen, and living space. Some of the kitchens come fully equipped with full refrigerators and center island countertops. The RVs provide the ability to take whatever its occupants need with them wherever they go. Some want something they can use when camping with their families on the weekends, while others are looking for a place to live in retirement. It's nice when you get somewhere and you have your own dishes and not worry about going out to eat, Pumphrey said. Joel Johnson of Decatur enjoys the time spent with his family when using their RV, which they've had several years. You are not reliant on hotels, he said. Dinner can be on our own timetable. We can sit by the campfire, and it has a community feel. Decatur isn't the only place with lots of choices for recreational vehicles. RV sales nationwide have been increasing, with continuing growth expected in the industry. The Recreation Vehicle Industry Association expects wholesale production to set a record in 2016 of 394,500 units produced, surpassing the recent peak of 390,362, set in 2006. Koyak said his top question for customers is the size of their family and figuring out how to comfortably fit them into a space. Some models have the ability to work as a living space or convert with space to haul motorcycles, golf carts, and four-wheelers. That eliminates the need to take multiple trailers or vehicles, she said. You can haul all your stuff. The RV business tends to include year-round operations with service work needed in the winter. Four Winds operates year-round at its showroom in Moroa, is indoors along with the service area that was recently expanded. Campers have gotten larger over the years, which he said requires more space to be able to pull them inside. We need the expansion, Koyak said. You can't count on the weather being perfect to work on them. This gives us the added space to do it. When it's pouring down rain, you can't get them prepped fast enough. Presley operates its service parts store across the street from where it sells new and used trailers. Some maintenance can keep the RVs running smoothly. She recommends getting the trailers ready for the winter to avoid pipes freezing or the roof leaking. Other maintenance can be performed on appliances, just like a home, or on the outside parts such as siding. She said Presley could eventually move more of the center to Boyd Road, where some trailers already are stored. Next article is entitled Lincoln Funeral Train to Go on Display in Hammond This Week. It's out of the AP feed from Hammond, Indiana. A replica of Abraham Lincoln's funeral train will be on display in Hammond this week. The train will be available at the Indiana Welcome Center starting Thursday through October 11th. The train is a replica of the locomotive that carried Lincoln's body back to his home state of Illinois after he was assassinated in Washington more than 150 years ago. The replica train engine arrived last month in Burns Harbor and is being stored near the Port of Indiana until the funeral car arrives in Hammond on Wednesday. The replica train engine arrived last month in Burns Harbor and is being stored near the Port of Indiana until the funeral car arrives in Hammond on Wednesday. The replica was built by Dave Cloak of Elgin, Illinois. Its funeral car was brought to Springfield in May for events to mark the 150th anniversary of the slain president's death. Since then, it has been drawing thousands of visitors during stops around the country. Next is an article by Kirk Erickson, H&R Springfield Bureau Chief. Panel endorses Mautino for Auditor General out of Springfield. State Representative Frank Mautino moved closer Tuesday to becoming Illinois' next Auditor General. On an 11-to-1 vote, a legislative panel endorsed the Spring Valley Democrat for the $154,000 a year post. That's the last step before the General Assembly is asked to sign off on his confirmation. Mautino, 53, will need support from 3/5 of the lawmakers in both chambers to support him as the state's lone non-elected constitutional officer. A vote could come as early as October 20th. Mautino said he hopes to model his tenure after retiring Auditor General William Holland, who managed a professional office and shielded his employees from politics. I've worked with the current Auditor General, and he is amazing. I also know the staff, and I've seen them work up close over the past 18 years. They are award-winning on national levels, Mautino said. Mautino's likely ascension to replace Holland came after he won an early endorsement from House Speaker Michael Madigan, who said Mautino's service as co-chairman of the Audit Commission gave him the experience to oversee the office. State Senator James Oberweis, Republican from Sugar Grove, cast the lone no vote for Mautino during a morning meeting of the Legislative Audit Commission. He wanted to give lawmakers a chance to also vote for finalist Mary Modelsky, an internal auditor in California with incredible credentials. Frank is a part of the system, Oberweis said. The fix was in, and Frank Mautino was going to get it. A total of 14 people applied for the job held by Holland since 1992. Along with Mautino and Modelsky, other finalists included Marion attorney Larry Sanders and State Representative Elaine Nekritz, Democrat of Northbrook. Audit Commission co-chairman Jason Berkman, a Republican state senator from Bloomington, said he also favored forwarding both Modelsky and Martino to the full General Assembly. But he said Martino's experience as a former Audit Commission chairman and as a longtime state lawmaker gives him the qualifications to serve in the post, which carries a 10-year term. I offered supportive comments for both candidates. Our charge was to determine who was qualified, and Representative Martino's lengthy service in the General Assembly makes him extremely knowledgeable about the workings of state, Berkman said. Berkman said some Republican members are concerned about Martino's partisan leanings in a position that calls for a nonpartisan approach. He's an active member of the Democratic Party and a member of Madigan's leadership team, Berkman said. But, Berkman added, I also think Frank has demonstrated a willingness to take a bipartisan approach to problem solving, and along with one other candidate, that being Mary Modelsky, we found him qualified to do the job. Martino has served in the Illinois House since 1991. This article is by Ryan Voiles, again an H&R staff writer, out of Mount Zion. Mount Zion Board considers favored Beltway route. The Mount Zion Village Board will take some more time to decide on the preferred alignment for the long-proposed Macon County South and East Beltway. After a lengthy discussion, the board decided during its Monday night meeting to table a vote until its next meeting to send a recommendation to the Illinois Department of Transportation on which alignment it prefers for the Beltway. The purpose of the Beltway, a project with more than 15 years of planning, is to address congestion through downtown Decatur on major state roadways while improving the movement of freight and the system linkage between major state roadways in the study area. Village Administrator Julie Miller said there's been recent pressure on the village in the past few weeks from federal and state agencies to make their preference known to move forward on the development. Along with a current preferred alignment, there have been four alternative alignments that have been designed and studied by Hanson Professional Services Incorporated. About a year ago, the Federal Highway Administration and the Illinois Department of Transportation approved a recommended route for the Beltway, with the southern segment north of Sulphur Spring Road, which would cut through annexed areas of the village, including the Silver Leaf Estate subdivision. Alternative alignments would go toward the far southern part of the village, which village officials prefer, but has previously been rejected by state and federal officials because traffic studies suggested that the location would not generate enough users. Others would cut slightly farther north than the current alignment, which village officials are less than enthused about. Hanson Transportation Engineer Matt Hayen said it is important for the board to have the options so it can show DOT and others that there was work and consideration taken into account. We have to look at a wide range so they understand that we didn't just go into the meeting with a preconceived notion of what we wanted, he said. If the state and federal officials do approve of one of the alternative routes, DOT would still need to conduct studies and analysis before it can get approved for development. Mount Zion Village Board is set to vote on the measure at its next meeting, October 19th. And now here's an editor's pick. Obama's caution in Syria is understandable. Contrary to popular belief, President Obama does have a plan for Syria. It's just not one that promises to have much immediate impact on the course of the brutal civil war. Russian President Vladimir Putin, by contrast, has a plan that is far bolder and much more likely to produce results on the ground, but only in the short term. I struggle to understand all the hand-wringing in Washington about the implications of Putin's intervention for American leadership. We're unprepared to wade in, for good reason in my view, and thus in no position to do much of anything about Russia's foray. From the start, Obama's bottom-line goal has been to avoid getting dragged into a multi-sided conflict in which the lines between good guys and bad guys are faint and shifting. The president has been cautious in sending arms to the moderate rebels, seeking to oust dictator Bashar al-Assad, fearing those weapons would fall into the hands of the Islamic State or other jihadist forces. Events have proved Obama right. Last month, the Pentagon admitted that 1/4 of a shipment of vehicles and ammunition intended for U.S.-trained good rebels was quickly handed over to the radical Jihad al-Nusra, an al-Qaeda affiliate. This is the first time U.S. officials have acknowledged such weapons transfer, but reportedly not the first time it has happened. The big problem is that our most important goal in Syria is different from that of the non-jihadist rebels we support. The overriding American interest, as defined by Obama, is to degrade and ultimately destroy the Islamic State. U.S. airstrikes are designed to further that end, with a major focus being support of rebel forces seeking to recapture Raqqa, the Islamic State's de facto capital in the eastern part of the country. For many of the rebels, however, the Islamic State is a secondary target. Their principal aim is deposing Assad, whose scorched earth campaign to retain power is responsible for most of the death and destruction in the country, and the exodus of millions of refugees who have flooded neighboring countries and created a crisis in Europe. So, according to foreign policy hawks, we're supposed to give substantially more weapons and air support to rebels whose goals are not the same as ours? That dog don't hunt, and I'm glad Obama remains so cautious. Putin, by contrast, has a single proxy in Syria and a clear goal, keeping Assad in power. Why should this be a surprise? Moscow has a decades-old relationship with the Assad family regime and a strategically valuable naval base in Syria. From Putin's point of view, the moderate rebels, who are stronger in the western part of the country, around the big cities of Aleppo and Damascus, are the more consequential threat. That is why the first Russian airstrikes were against good rebels rather than bad ones. By no means would I ever defend Putin's Syria policy, which is morally bankrupt, but it's important to understand it. Inevitably, there have been already reports of civilian casualties from the Russian bombing campaign, but the tragic U.S. bombing Saturday of Doctors Without Borders Hospital in Kunduz, Afghanistan, gives Russian officials a convenient retort. We regret there is always unfortunate collateral damage in war. Which brings me to the underlying lesson from the Kunduz accident. Be careful how you choose your friends. The U.S. airstrike reportedly was called in by Afghan military officers, who either made a terrible mistake or had their own reasons for wanting the hospital bombed. In Syria's bloody, crazy quilt landscape, where we have even less reliable allies on the ground, the possibilities for such deadly mistakes are myriad. All of the above mistakes make Syria a place to tread lightly and carefully. Putin's actions have provoked calls for Obama to do something, anything, and I'm sure the Republican presidential candidates will have lots of bellicose advice. Most will involve action the president might have taken several years ago, when the war began. Only Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, has a real alternative plan of action. Send tens of thousands of U.S. troops into Syria and Iraq, and he's barely registering 1% in the polls. Simple fact is that Russia has a clear way to achieve its immediate goals in Syria, while the United States does not. Obama's continued reluctance to act for action's sake is prudent and presidential. He is right to keep the national interest in mind, not the national ego. This has been Dee with the Decatur Herald and Review for October 7th, 2015. I look forward to reading with you again soon. Thank you.